I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Blue Wire.
Breaking news, LeBron is a Laker.
Here comes LBJ!
This Clippers team will win a championship this year.
Paul George, corner three.
Yes, sir!
Bryant has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! He banks in the three! And the Lakers win the game!
What's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Battle for LA podcast, part of the Clutch Points and Blue Wire Networks. As usual, Tomer Azarli, your Clippers beat writer for Clutch Points here, and I'm joined by a very special guest. Been trying to get him for a couple weeks, try to wrap him up after the finals, and we got him. We've locked him in. Richard Jefferson, 2016 NBA champion, 17 years,
but who's counting?
Richard, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time amid everything going on. Thank you very much. First of all, how are you and I guess your family doing amid everything? It's still a crazy time in this world.
Look, you know what? It is a crazy time, and you got to take care of yourself and your family. And I think the thing that's crazy about the time that we're in is that I think there's always a half step more that you have to consider for other people, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't know what that person's going through. You don't know what that person's dealing with. So not only are you really focused in on yourself, but it's also weirdly a time that you should also be a little bit more considerate and tolerant of other people.
I mean, you hit it right on the head. It is a weird time for everyone. It really, I think people have forgotten to be considerate of other people in terms of what they may be going through, especially everyone stuck at home, people losing jobs. Mm-hmm. So it is crazy, but I am thankful that I still have my job, as I'm sure a lot of people who have been able to keep theirs are.
Same
as well.
Here.
I just want to jump right into it. You know, NBA season is wrapped up. You were in the bubble for a period, correct?
Yeah, I was in the bubble for 40 days.
40 days. So I think most teams stay there for 100. What were the 40 days like for you there? I mean, was it as bad as everyone made it sound?
No. You know what? It was weird. It was tough, but not that the conditions were bad. That's not it. But it's like, how many times in human history have people been confined to a certain area, even if it was just for fun? Even if it was a beautiful resort, even if it was, you know, it was more of like, you're away from your family, you're competing, you're doing this, and you're there for months. You're there for 3 months in the same hotel room, in the same this and the same that, eating similar food. Like, that's never, the Olympics are 2 weeks, and you hear about how excited people are to go home. So I think it was definitely a very unique social experiment. But I had a good time. I was only there for 40 days. And when you see that there were people there was 100 plus, there's not much that you can say to them. And so, you know, I just enjoyed it. You made the best of it. You know, I learned how to play pickleball and, you know, random stuff. And you just have fun with it. You just kind of enjoy it and make the best of the situation.
I know there were different tier system. Were you in tier one, which was being able to engage with the players and everything as well?
Yeah, I was in tier one. And so a lot of people, I was the one analyst there for ESPN that was from a player's perspective. And the weird thing about being there, and everyone's like, oh, you're gonna go hang out with Bron or JR, or you're gonna go see Jamal Murray, or you're gonna go see any. It's like, no, look, the one thing that I've learned about from playing in four NBA finals and being in the playoffs, you know, 10, 11 times, whatever number it is, it's that you are there with that team. Like, you're locked in, you're in that journey. So I never really reached out to the guys. Like, we saw each other. We would still on the same text chains, cracking jokes and stuff. But you saw players, but there wasn't a lot of like hanging out. Like, dude, I'm 40. Like, I'm a retired player. Like, you know, it's like, I'm not going to go and see like with Gary Harris wants to play video games tonight. Right. But at the same point in time, I think that they should be drinking with their teammates, not drinking with me. So if they were to reach out and if they were to hit me up, but also when I got there was the Western Conference Finals where everything was its most intense. So unless somebody hit me up or unless somebody shouted me out, I was just going to kind of let them do their own thing.
I mean, you said you're 40, but you don't look 40. I'll say that. You look the same as you did when you were 23, 24.
Thank you. So I looked old as shit then. That's what I really was. I looked old as shit then. That's all. Thanks for that.
So what did you make of the entire NBA bubble format? I mean, there was obviously a lot of different things to take into account. Obviously, the daily testing, making sure players were fed, and just logistics. There was so much to handle.
No one wants to do it because you're isolated, especially given the time that we're in, to be isolated with family and friends and kids and loved ones. And there's a lot of things that go into it. As far as like, was it kind of cool that they could put this on? Yes. Did it cost $150 million to do? Yes. The amount of testing, the amount of all of the stuff that went into ultimately trying to finish the season, it was beautiful what the NBA was able to pull off. It's kind of like when you are able to see something that like, I don't know. It's like when you see something tragic happen, whether it's a hurricane or whether it's this, and all of a sudden, like not TJ Watt. Oh my God, what's his brother's name? I keep getting his name. JJ Watt. I keep saying JJ Watt. When they had that tragedy in Houston, and he's like, you know, started a campaign and got millions and millions of dollars donated to him. And they were able to help rebuild Houston with its houses and all these other things. You're like, something tragic happened, but look at what these people were able to do. And look what he was able to do to help rebuild the community. And I look at it the same way in a bigger scale. It's like, look, man, like sports are canceled. The country's struggling, all these other things. And the NBA was able to pull that off. Like that's something that is, you know, even baseball, they were so close. And all of a sudden you had a Justin Turner situation right at the end. And it was like, all of a sudden now the World Series, instead of talking about LA and the championships and the Dodgers in 30 something years, it's like, well, Justin Turner was, what did he do? And he put people at risk. So it was like the fact that the NBA were able to get all the way through it, it was like just a compliment to them even more.
So I was going to bring that up later, but since you brought it up now, I wanted to talk about it because like you said, the attention is turned to Justin Turner's punishment probably for completely disregarding the MLB's request to stay back and stay quarantined. And I guess, how do you react to that? Because obviously, you know, not being a pro athlete, I can't know. You obviously want a championship. You know that you really want to celebrate with guys. But this is an unprecedented time, a virus we don't know much about long-term wise. Go ahead.
I don't know. You're right. I think it's difficult because a lot of times there's so many hypotheticals, and the hypotheticals still exist. What if somebody else got it and he wasn't the only person? Typically, if one person has it, multiple people has it. Right. It might not have incubated. Their numbers might not have been high enough to be testing positive. And I guess they look at it from a standpoint of like, hey, we're done. Like, if people catch COVID, people, but it's like, yo, their coach had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, you know, 10 years ago. So you're like, dude, you're putting this person that is, you know, older in age, that has a pre-existing health injury or health issue, and you're putting this person at risk just by sitting next to your coach. And they're like, there are other people that are like, well, he was there for 7 innings. And it's like, that doesn't matter. There's no guarantee just because I was with you. It's prolonged exposure. Like, we don't know enough about it. It's tough, man. The Dodgers won. That should be the focus. He's kind of taken away a little bit of attention, and people are like, well, he deserved to celebrate with his fans or with his teammates. That is true. But there's also else something true. Like when you win a championship and you want to be able to go home and see your parents. So if it's, you know, if it's Mookie Betts and he wants to go home and see his parents, he wants to go home and see his grandmother. He wants to go and see other people. Like he now has to quarantine for a week because of one individual and what he, you know, what he did or the rules that he tried not to abide by. So as much as everyone wants to be like, well, he deserved to go celebrate with his team, all of these other guys also deserve to be able to go celebrate with their families right away. And not they're not able to.
I think it shows that what the NBA was able to accomplish was just, incredible. I know it's been talked about, but just, I don't think they had a single coronavirus case inside the bubble. And they continued to, I think Adam Silver and the NBA stopped sending out the weekly reports because they just had no cases. It was so strict and so tight that they didn't have any cases.
They did not play in there. I actually made a mistake. I went to a yellow zone. I was in the green zone. And I went to a yellow zone trailer to get tested. And and I joke about it on the Sports Gap because basically what happens is when you fly in so that they can start counting your quarantine days, you have to fly in before 4 o'clock. Now, people on the Eastern United States, that's easy. I was coming from Los Angeles. So when I came in from Los Angeles, it was past the 4 p.m. zone. So what they did is they took me basically onto where the arena was, and they took me to a trailer at the arena. So they take me there. I test. Then I go to the hotel, the Waldorf. So I'm there for a couple of days. After that, I test negative every single time. I then go inside the green zone at the resort. Well, now when I'm in there, I'm testing every single day for a week before I'm allowed to go outside, right? Before I'm allowed to communicate.
Oh, wow. So you had almost like a double incubation period.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like you test 2 days. If you test negative for those 2 days, then you get to go inside the bubble. And then inside the bubble, you have to test negative for another like 5 days before you're able to actually go and communicate with people. Now, wow. So now when I get in there for 5 days, I test negative. Finally, I'm out. I'm doing my thing, whatever, blah, 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 hanging out. Like a week or 10 days later, you get like an email saying, hey, you haven't tested it. You haven't tested yet. I'm on my way to the arena. So I get to the arena and I'm like, oh, I got a test. And I see the same station that I had tested at when I first landed. And I was like, oh, I'll just go there and get tested. It's literally like 200 feet. So I walk through, you know, like one little metal fence. I walk through there. Mm-hmm. I go get tested, whatever. Cool. Fast forward a day later, they're like, hey, you did not test. Make sure you test. I'm like, oh, I did test it. I tested at the arena. And they were like, you did what? And apparently that was a yellow zone. So those people in the yellow zone, they can go Walmart. They can go home to their family and friends. They can go do anything that they wanted to. Right. But they get tested like every other day, but just not as frequently because they're in the yellow zone. So had I gone there and contracted it in the yellow zone, because these people can go to Walmart, they can go to Magic City, they can go do anything. Had I contracted it and then brought it back in the bubble and then played pickleball with the referees, been around the players, like single hand. And so after I did that, they put up a bunch of signage. They changed the protocol because they understood that I was one of the few people that tested at that station. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think of anything negative about going there to test again. I just associated it with the green zone. So I almost fucked up the bubble.
Damn, that's crazy.
Long story.
No, I mean, it's crazy because it could be, you know, like you said, when one person gets it, it's not usually just one. It's one and another. And you don't even know you're giving it to someone until maybe 3 or 4 days later. That's wild.
Yeah. So what they figured out is what they had to do is go and make sure that the people that were there during my testing weren't, none of them tested positive. So if any of those people had tested positive, they made me quarantine for like 36 hours. Make sure. So I had to go back into quarantine like 2 weeks after I'd already been there. But I only went into quarantine for like a few hours or for like 24 more hours just to make sure they tested me, make sure that gave them time to go make sure that nobody else. Point being is this, it was super stringent. It was super stringent and they weren't playing at all. Yeah, they weren't fucking playing.
That sounds like it. I guess going into more of the playing, you know, on the court stuff, is there anything that surprised you most by the play in the bubble? And then I guess maybe a team disappointed you or surprised you positively.
Well, I think the thing that not surprised me, but it was really cool to see like how many young players played extremely well, especially in the postseason. And a lot of that, I don't care what anybody says, it's the truth. The reason why these young players are able to be so dominant is there was no travel. So there's less wear and tear. And on top of it, they didn't have opposing crowds. It just is what it is. It's like, if there was one outlier that happened in this thing, it was like there were younger players that played extremely well. And it's like, okay, well, what could be the reason why they were able to play well? It's like, oh, wow, Tyler Hero, even though he is a stud, didn't have to play in front of the Boston crowd. He didn't have to play in front of the Laker crowd where like his, you know, he could be, you know, his childhood crush could be Jennifer Aniston. I don't know. She might be too old for him. But his childhood crush could be anybody, and they're sitting courtside. That's a level of distraction, right? Like that you get with in LA, that you get in Miami, that in Boston, having fans like just throw beer at you in warmups. Like these are things that like can affect a younger player. And I think you saw guys like Jamal Murray, you saw guys like TJ Warren, you saw the younger players were the ones, including Dame Lillard, no disrespect, but those are the guys that really kind of jumped out as like, oh, these guys are like serious playoff performers right now.
I know a lot of the younger players, well, for example, like Paul George, a couple of games where he said the black backdrop and it just was really like a shooter's gym for a lot of players. Yeah. They could just laser in and focus on that. I think it's what we saw a lot of better shooting. I don't know if you share the same sentiment on that.
No, yeah, it's depth perception. Like when you have guys that are shooting in high school gyms and now they're shooting in arenas, even for like a like for players that they talk about all the time up at Syracuse and when they play in that dome. Whereas like at Arizona, like we play in front of, you know, 15, 18,000 people. But then when you go and play in the Final Four and you're playing in the Superdome, it's like there's a depth perception there that is changing. And I don't care what people say, if they don't understand, is that when you're looking at something, it's just the human reaction, the human eye, whether you're nearsighted or farsighted. If the background is right up against like a high school gym, or if it's the background is like an arena, or if the background is like a stadium, those are three different depth perceptions. And so, and if you get used to it, which a lot of these guys did, because that's the only environment that they're playing in. There is no change of environment. They're always playing in a consistent, there's a constant there. Anytime there's a constant, it's very, it's, it makes it exponentially easier.
Did, I guess, is any of that for the young players, is there a carryover into next season when we might be back in arenas, some level of fans, I think?
Well, I think the fans thing is kind of like a double-sided thing. Once you've got that confidence and you know what you have the ability to do, even if you struggle for one or two games, you have that confidence in like, I know what I can do. Ultimately, these fans don't make you miss every shot. They're not going to make you play bad every game, but there might be some sort of like, you know, shift where it's like some fans heckling you and you just broke up with your girlfriend and you're not trying to hear that shit and the coach is getting on your nerve. Like there's a lot more involved in the pot that can either be for you or against you. It's the same thing playing at home. There's going to be crowds cheering for you. So do I think that there's a residual effect? I think the depth perception and the change of environment, that's different. That's part of the reason why when you see legacies, when you see like the Detroit Pistons playing against the Boston Celtics, and this is the third year in a row they played. Well, the Detroit Pistons are used to playing in the Boston Garden because they've played there however many times over the past like three or four seasons. So that's where those games and rivalries become tighter, is because there is something there when you know the familiarity, not just of the players, but also the environment and the experience and the gym.
So did, I guess, did that familiarity affect or help you guys at all? I mean, with the Warriors-Cavs series, I mean, you guys went four. You were there for three of them, right?
Two. I started off training camp the third year, and then I ended up getting traded to Denver. So I was there for two of the finals. And then the third year, I was there to start, but ended up leaving. Does it help? Yeah, when you know what to experience. And I had been on the Warrior team just, I think, two seasons before when Steph first broke the broke the three-point record and then went to we lost to San Antonio in the second round. So I knew what to expect. I know what the Golden State. If anything, it was more intense the earlier years because by the end, it was so much money. It was so expensive. And once you start to like outprice the casual fan, the environment changes exponentially. The environment changes when you have like tech guys and billionaires and just like people that are when like Raider Nation, or, and I'm not saying there's a lower class of people, but a lower demographic of financially people, when they're spending, you know, $500 for three people to go to a game versus having to spend $5,000. You're not bringing people. When you're spending $5,000 and $10,000 on three tickets, you're typically not painting your face and screaming at the top of your lungs.
No, I 100% agree with you on that, because I noticed, you know, when I covered the Warriors-Clippers series, obviously that wasn't expected to be a close series a couple years ago when they had KD and Steph. And so you notice the first couple games, I think they were pretty pretty cheap price. They weren't that expensive to go into. And you see fans were really raucous and loud. And by the time game five came around, you saw a lot more suits in the crowd. You saw a lot more people of, I guess, higher financial stature. And it wasn't as loud. You can tell. I think
they try, but it's like Warriors. Like that was, so when my first year, because that was the first year they made the playoffs since the We Believe team. So when they did that, it was like the minute you ran out on the court, you just started hearing that chant, like 20 on the clock. And so when they did that, it was just so intense right away. And then when we played there during the NBA Finals, like I knew the reputation. They were trying to repeat. It wasn't nearly as intense. Doesn't mean it didn't rise up there, but there's a level of intensity like a college plays. They are amped before the game even starts.
Right.
Where other places, it starts to rise. The Warriors used to be a place where it was over the top before it started, like a college atmosphere. Now it's one of those places where it kind of rises as it goes.
Interesting. wanted to pause real quick to tell you guys about Indeed. As you know, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. That's why Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resume on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the United States visit Indeed each month, according to ComScore, total visits. So it's clear Indeed can help you get the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Did watching LeBron and JR celebrate remind you a bit of 2016?
1,000%. Yeah. I stand by this. In all of my years of ever playing basketball, and even now being on this other side for 2 years, I never rooted for anybody. I don't, even my best friend and whoever it is, I didn't give a damn who won, like whatever. This was the first time where I kind of found myself rooting for someone, and rooting for Bron and rooting for JR. I know what JR, some of it is his own doing, my guy, because I love him to death, but he knows he's, you know, he's an individual that like, he cares a lot. He's a passionate guy, but sometimes he gets too passionate. But for Bron and all of the weight of coming onto LA, the injury of last season, the criticism of the young players, Kobe's passing, just all of these things, even having to be the face of the league during the social injustice situation, like there was just a lot on there. And so like, this was the first time that I actually like wanted something. I was like, yo, he needs one more. I like, in my opinion, was like, my guy needs one more. And then after that, like, you know, whatever. But I just understood how much this championship meant to the city of LA, to what he was trying to accomplish, to Kobe and his family. And it was just like, I found myself rooting for those guys. And that's the first and only time I ever have and ever will again.
Do you chime in on the GOAT conversation very often? Do you have one?
I do. My thing is this, is that I think, again, we talk about this on the Sports Gab. One of the reasons why I love it, because we're able to kind of go into some more depth. And it's like, look, people don't talk about Bill Russell being the champion because there was 8 teams in the NBA when they were able to do it. There was 8 teams and they won 11. Now, it doesn't mean that they didn't face Will Chamberlain and Jerry West, but there was not very many teams. So when you were the best team, you were just the best team. There was no free agency. There wasn't player movement. So like in that place, like when you become the dominant team, there are things that are put in place that make it easier. Fast forward, like Jordan, right? Like he wins 6 championships in 8 years, but often isn't criticized for the years where he didn't make it, where LeBron will be criticized when he takes a Cleveland team, but loses to a dynasty in the San Antonio Spurs, loses to an actual dynasty at 22 years old, right? And it's like, but Jordan's not criticized for losing to the Detroit Pistons for all those years, where it was like, Jordan even said he wasn't working hard enough. He was great, but I got to get in the gym for hours every day. So it's like, they weren't good enough, but he's not criticized in that manner. And the other thing that I talk about too, when we talk about the GOAT, is the growth of the game, right? There might've been 200 million people playing basketball when Bill Russell played. Yeah. There might be, you know, 350 million people playing when Michael Jordan was dominating. And fun fact, again, we talk about this on the show, is there was like 26 players from like 16 different countries in 1997. Michael Jordan's, I'm paraphrasing these numbers, but Michael Jordan's last year, There's like 20, like there's probably like 30 countries represented. Now there's 100 and something international players. Yeah, so that's what the Dream Team did. The Dream Team grew the game. So is it harder to be the most dominant player over 500 million people, over 300 million people, or 100? It's obviously harder to be more dominant over a larger group of people. Yeah. So your level of success can equate to, so Michael Jordan's six, is that equal to Bill Russell's 11? Is you know, LeBron James's, you know, four the same as Kobe's five? So that's what I'm just saying. Overall, I'm not here to talk about numbers and who's this, but it's like at the end of the day, there are more people playing basketball today than there was in the 60s, than there was in the 90s, than there, you know what I'm saying? And there's going to be more people playing in 2020 or in 2040. So ultimately, it's going to be harder and harder and harder to be dominant.
Yeah. I think the one thing I don't understand, which I agree with you on, is that reaching the finals and losing there should not be looked at negatively. I think when you look at the 07 team that the Spurs got, they were a dynasty. Last 2 years of the Warriors were a dynasty. I guess if you wanted to, the 2011 year was probably the one that LeBron probably shouldn't have lost and didn't play his best. And I think, it helped fuel him moving forward. But even, 2015, Kevin Love goes down, Kyrie goes down. I don't think those should be looked at as negative as they are. I mean, he got there. Yeah. You get to the finals. Why is that a negative?
And think about this. And it's like when we want to talk about guys, even this area, the Golden State Warriors and how dominant they've been, right? With, Kevin Durant and all these other guys. And you look at it and you're like, well, wait a second. These guys, they played in what, five finals and they won three of them, right? So it's like these guys got two losses and they were dominant teams, best record of all time, like the most dominant team when you talk about Kevin Durant and all these five Hall of Famers on their team, you know, when you're including the coach. And so it's like, look, Jordan's excellence of 6 for 6 should not be understated. Three in a row, twice, done. But the man played a long time.
Yeah.
The man only, like, it was like, I always joke, I was like, why did Jordan only go to 6 finals? It's like, well, this was tougher and this was tougher. It's like, but he only went to 6 finals. What was he doing the first like 7-8 years of his career? Right. And it's like, he was getting his head beat in by Boston. He was getting his head beat in by the Pistons. And they were close. They went to conference finals and stuff like that. But it's like, you want to look at a conference finals loss to the Pistons positively, but then want to look at a loss to the San Antonio Spurs as a dynasty in the prime as a negative thing for a 22-year-old. That's why the GOAT is more about your opinion and it's more about your fandom than it is being able to actually break down the numbers.
That's a great way to put it. I really like that, actually. That's a great way to put it.
That's why I talk for a living.
did you know that I saw this on a graphic and on Reddit the other day. LeBron has helped 40 different players win their first NBA championship in their careers.
Damn right. Look, but even when you look at Michael Jordan said it during The Last Dance. He was like, when he was kind of beefing with Steve Kerr and like practice and stuff, was like, look, I want everyone to win a championship, but I have to put them through the fire in order for them to be able to help me and to be able to do the things needed.
Yeah.
Right. That was part of his like kind of like putting guys and pushing guys so hard. Where LeBron James has to do the exact same thing, right? If you've played on the team with LeBron in the last 10 years, you've been to the NBA finals, right? Mm-hmm. Except for 2 years ago when he got injured and whatever. So it's like when you break that down, you're like, that if you're playing with LeBron James, you have to be ready for an NBA finals. You have to be, and that mentality starts like training camp. You look around and if that guy's on your team, do you 8-9 straight years, he's made it to the postseason. He's been to the finals. Yeah. So it's like, if you look around and that guy's on your team, oh, I need to start getting ready for the NBA finals. Right. And that's just like, when you talk about how many guys he's helped win a championship, but also like, think about how many guys have been in that position that have had to mentally prepare for what this journey of this guy's going to put you on.
That's another conversation there where, like you said, from training camp, from day one, it starts. And I think LeBron teams also have a bigger, they're under microscope more. I think it's just that easy. They're under the microscope more. Everything that he says, everything that everyone else says, fit in, not fit out, you were there for all that. It's under the microscope the entire time. As part of an LA podcast, so I got to talk about the other team as well. The Clippers, what do you attribute their collapse to? Because I covered the team and you know, I have my own opinion, but I want to hear your opinion. What led to their collapse?
You know, look, I don't know. I don't know. I think there were some things that I think in hindsight, they probably should have done differently as individuals, as a staff. I think, you know, Kawhi has, and understandably, we've seen too many great players go places and say, hey, look, this is how it's going to be. If you want me, this is how it's going to be. Like with LeBron James, every place he's ever been, almost every place, every time he's left a city, you know, Miami won the championship in the second year. Cleveland won a championship in his second year. Lakers wins a championship in his second year and goes to the finals in all three of his first years there. And so every player comes with something. He's like, hey, look, this is my guy, Rich Paul. This is my guy, Ramos. This is Maverick. This is my team. And if you want me, this is what comes with it. And I think Kawhi Leonard had some of that with him this year, where it was like they were going to do anything they could to get Kawhi Leonard. And so it was like, whether it's like, hey, we're going to rest him. Like this man rested like the fourth game of the season on a back, the first game of a back-to-back. And it's like, dude, you're not even tired yet. But that was the thing that they had agreed on to get him. And ultimately, did that cause some like chemistry issues? Not like because people are resentful, because I know if LeBron needed a day off, shit, take it, dude. Take 2 days off. I don't give a damn. Just be ready to go at the end. So it never caused friction that way, but it caused like a lack of chemistry of we need to be able to ready to go through the fire when our back's against the wall. Like, how do we handle this? And the more times you do that in the regular season, the better equipped you are to do that in the postseason. And then you combine that with the bubble. How much did those guys really want to be there? You know, only they truly know. But for a great team like that to go down 3-1 with that type of coaching staff and T. Lou and Sam Cassell and Doc Rivers and just so much talent over there, it, you know, I don't know what their collapse was about. I think the most obvious thing is the point of chemistry. And that's, I feel like that's a fair statement.
I think when you talk about, especially the 3-1 leads, like you have to be a good team to get a 3-1 lead in the first place. You don't just get that by luck. And so, you know, Doc Rivers teams have had 3-1 leads, but the adjustments just haven't come there. Like, for example, from my perspective, they didn't play Ivica Zubac enough. And I think they played Montrezl Harrell too much. When you look at the on-off numbers, I don't know if you've seen those, but Zubac was just a much more effective player, both offensively and defensively. And I think, you know, in my perspective, Doc's a great coach, but his love for Trez kind of was their downfall because Jokic just dominated. Jamal Murray got loose late. Do you think they have a good enough team to just run it back next year with the same team?
Yeah. Or do they need to make changes? Yeah. Look, they were my pick to win a championship, and everyone's trying to throw it in people's faces. It's like, dude, I don't give a damn if I'm wrong. It's like, yo, they had the best bench. They had a great coaching staff. They had two of the best starters. They had a defensive team through and through. Like, it was like they had every single thing. There hasn't been too many teams that are that tailor-made. But again, where the Miami Heat tailor-made to run it back after they lost to Dallas, right? Where the Cleveland Cavaliers tailor-made to run it back after they lost to Golden State the first year. It's like, yes, these teams, it's okay. It's okay. Like the Golden State Warriors, when they won the championship after they lost to the Clippers, when they won the championship, nothing changed. They ran it back. The guys got one more year of experience. They went to the second round, then actually regressed, lost to the Clippers in the first round. Then the following year, they went a championship and then became a dynasty. Same with Michael Jordan and these guys losing to the Detroit Pistons. Same with Shaq and David Robinson with having the best record, but losing to the Lakers. Then the next year, they run it back, and then they win a championship. So it's like there's too many times in history where you see, like, just because you give people all of the talent in the first year doesn't mean it's going to be successful. It just means that they need to take time. Where in history is it like, hey, you win this championship? If not, how about the fucking Dodgers? The Dodgers have been like so far, so close, game seven, and they kept plugging away. So there are more times in history where you benefit from continuing to plug away than there are when you should just scrap it after year two and just be like, oh, we tried. It's like, then no, you didn't. This is professional sports. These guys did not get here because they had success right away. They got here even to be professionals from persevering.
Right. Playing under T. Lou, you know, a couple of years there, won a title. What does he bring to the Clippers that I think can help them?
Well, T. Lou's funny, man. No, I laugh because like T. Lou's so chill, man. T. Lou's so chill, and he's so honest, and he has such a great relationship. And I'm not, not Doc obviously has the exact same relationship. There's, you know, probably a 15-year, you know, gap in age, mm-hmm. but you know, T. Lou is closer in age. Like T. Lou, I want to assume probably played against Kawhi. He definitely played against Kawhi. No, very so. Close.
Retired, yeah.
But he played against Paul George, I want to say.
Very, I think he retired the year he was drafted. Like 09-10.
Even if when I say T. Lou playing, I mean like he was in the NBA around that time. Point being is this, he's closer in age to these guys, right, and just how they talk, how they think, their experiences than probably Doc is. So that's something that, not saying that he's a better coach, but there's a level of relatability when you're closer in age. And so I just look at it from that perspective of like, you know, obviously he has respect. Obviously there was relationships for these guys would not have, I say like these star players sign off and it's like, hey, this is what we're leaning towards. And it's like, yo, I fucking hate T. Lou. Then they're not going to sign T. Lou because they're like, yo, this guy can be a free agent. And if he's telling us that he hates this guy, then, and we'd say we're still going to sign him, what does that say? So you can already see that there's a level of respect and chemistry growing within the group.
Chris, you're talking about chemistry and relatability. Did you foresee Kyrie wanting to leave Cleveland the way he did?
Well, I think there were other things that went into that kind of circumstance where, you know, potentially getting traded and, you know, all the trade rumors that were going on because they understood that, you know, with the way, you know, Golden State was configured, it was going to be next to impossible to beat them. So I think, yeah, they were trying to trade and trying to do some things, but I didn't know. I think, you know, we love Kyrie, you know, every player has something that comes with them. Doesn't matter if it's Channing Frye, myself, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, everybody's got something that comes with them. And I think Kyrie's a great dude. I think he's a really good person, but I understand as a young lion trying to run, you know, there's a difference between being, right, you know, a cub, being a young lion, and then a person that's trying to control his own pride, mm-hmm, right? And I think, and by pride, I mean like a group of lions, not, yeah, ego.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so I think he wanted that opportunity. I think he felt like he had accomplished everything he could. Won a championship, get one of the biggest shots in the history of the game of basketball, all-star MVP, Olympic gold medal, world championship. Yeah. I think the last thing left for him to do was run his own team and have his own like team and go be successful. And fail or not, guys like that is like, dude, I don't care if I fail. I want to go try. That's the last thing I want to accomplish. And who are you after being the number one pick and all these accomplishments to tell me that I'm not ready or this or that?
That reminds me, during that title run, Lil Kev was, I was just getting into reporting, but that was one of my favorite. I think people alongside with me were literally dying for content regarding Lil Kev.
That was the funniest thing. Dude, I was in social media. So that's why, you know, I appreciate all the love from, you know, and the retweets and the posts because I didn't start social media until, and again, I didn't get Instagram and Twitter until I retired. So like over that run, like the guy, Snapchat was the new cool thing. And I started doing it and it became fun and it blew up. Like I'm talking about, I was getting, you know, 100, 150,000, you know, unique visitors. Like anytime I would post something, sure, it was nuts, sure, during the run. And so it was like, should I have started my social media then? Yeah, probably, but I didn't really give a damn. But yeah, Little Kev was awesome. But it just showed like the reason why I started on it is because there was always so much rumors about like guys not getting along. And yes, I think we understand it more now that if you're going to win a championship, there's going to be tension, but people would only see the tension and that's what they would focus on. They wouldn't focus on Bron and Kevin and Tristan and Kyrie and myself and JR sitting at dinner laughing and joking for 2 hours after. They would not see that. They would just see the arguments on the court. And it's like, yo, that's just because we're all competitive. We all are holding each other accountable, mm-hmm, and we get frustrated, but you guys aren't seeing the brotherhood. So when I started showing that, I actually legitimately saw a shift in our team because those questions about are we close stopped coming, right? And once those things stop coming, then people start to like focus in on, okay, these guys are actually close. Like, oh, you know, Kevin Love and Bron hate each other. It's like, well, these dudes are at dinner every other night laughing and joking on Richard's Snapchat. So that's not true. You're telling me lies. And so once I saw that it had that type of positive effect, you know, I just kind of kept going and people loved it. So you know, I learned something in it, you know, about that's, social media. Yeah,
that's interesting. I didn't know that. I didn't, from my perspective, I didn't pay attention too much to that because I wasn't I'm talking about the negative perception to positive perception, because I was getting into covering, but I was more of a fan back then.
Yeah.
But man, those were incredible. I'm telling you, people were waiting by their phones for it. It was crazy.
So many people I would get that, like, yo, I just joined Snapchat so I could see your stories.
Yeah. But I did. Really,
yeah. But it was cool. And that's so Snapchat. They were very, very nice to me, but it was little things that I was learning. It was like, I learned so much about the media in that moment, because it was like, you understand ESPN does like the walk-in and they have like LeBron James and what is he wearing and his shoes. And they have this whole thing that they do on the walk-in. Well, we were getting that on the bus 30 minutes before, right? Uh-huh. So it was driving ESPN nuts, because I would put on my Snapchat like Channing, that's a terrible shirt. Or Brian, I feel like those jeans are too tight. So if you followed my Snapchat, you got to see that whole intro of walking in. Then you would hear Brian is like, what are you talking about? You don't like these? Or you would hear Kyrie is like, yo, these are my new joints. And so you would hear us talking about that before you would ever see us on. And it was like, people were just like mind blown of like, this content is crazy. And I was like, you learn something. You don't just sit in the moment. Like, I was an older player. I was 35 at the time. You're like, okay, I'm learning something. What people like, what people are interested, what goes viral, what places like Clutch Points picks up and puts out, you know, even putting Braun drives at Kia, random shit. It was like all of this stuff. I just learned so much valuable information over that like 6 months time.
I think it was mainly crazy because when you see those walk-in videos, you see people looking like serious, like they're locked in. Yeah. You use that caption and everything. But if 10 minutes on the bus before you were just joking about your jeans and your kicks, it's like, oh, so you guys are just loose and fun and getting ready to go. You're not that serious and locked in the entire time.
Yeah. No, but that's why I started the podcast. That's how I started road tripping the podcast.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's exactly how I started it, was because I was like, oh, if this is the content that people want from like little Kev and Snapchat, oh shit, why don't I go and do an hour long sit down with my teammates where we're doing the things that we're doing at dinner. I was like, yeah, we're sitting here cracking jokes at dinner, telling stories about random stuff. I'm like, Kevin, like, let's do a podcast. And again, it takes a mind of its own. It takes process. You have to learn the digit and all, but it's like, fuck it. This is what we're going to do. So we start doing that. And we started the first athlete in season podcast. There's hundreds of them now on college campuses. We were the legitimate first. And it all came from, take your time. JJ
Redick. I can't think of anyone.
JJ Redick started a podcast, but he would do it during the off season where he would interview people. I only interviewed my teammates or random guys that we were playing against. Me and Channing did. And we did it in season. So it was like, we would play a game against Boston, and then that we would record, we recorded on the airplane. So then on the airplane, we would all have mics telling about Boston. Then like the next day we would drop the podcast and people's brains were like exploding that we were like sitting here drinking wine. Like, you know, we lost a great game to a close opponent. And then we had another night and all of a sudden they're like, these guys are just laughing. And you're like, God, how awesome is that? They finally got to be a fly on the wall. Yeah. And so it was like, but all of that, what made me start a podcast is what is the same, everything that I learned from doing Little Kev and starting Snapchat. So I was like, let me go do a podcast. And all of a sudden the podcast successful. I was like, hey, we might have something here. So then that's how I got into doing other things, and ultimately which led me to the Sports Gap.
I think before we move on real quick, I think my favorite guest that you had on that I was shocked that you got, I think was Tim Duncan.
Everyone says the same shit.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I was like, how the hell did they get Tim Duncan to agree to do this?
Yeah, Timmy that's is my just, guy. That's
no, my, I'm like, sure he is, but he's like, he's just not social media savvy or even media savvy, really. He doesn't do anything.
He doesn't do anything, but that's kind of the culture there. And he's not big social media, but he didn't fully understand when I was like, hey, you don't understand. When we landed there, I was like, Tim, can you please do it? And I was like, we got in a car when we landed in San, and the team wasn't really happy about this because we were doing something that was new. They were not, but it was just uncharted territory. Mm-hmm. They were like, we can't post this if you guys are going to be cussing and talking about this. And I was like, I don't give a shit. Don't post it. I'm going to do this on my own. And so it was like, we landed in San Antonio and I had a separate car taking us to the practice facility to go record Tim Duncan. And it was like, Tim is like, to this day, like, he's like a big brother to me. I love him to death. He's such an asshole. He's so funny. We sat next to each other on the plane for years. We were on the Olympic team together. I love him to death. And so it was like for us to sit, and there were stories about him and Channing telling about they were in the same World of Warcraft guild. I didn't even know these things. And so we're starting to crack jokes about this. And I'll never forget, on Twitter, when we dropped the podcast, there was like a San Antonio account, that was San Antonio fan account. There was like, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Duncan is on Richard Jefferson podcast for 45 minutes. This is not a drill. And it was like, yo, I couldn't believe it. It's still one of our best. And like, Tim was so good. People don't understand how much of an asshole and how funny he is because he just doesn't care to show it to people. But if you sit down and talk with him about anything other than basketball, that man won't shut up. He'll talk about cars, poker, you know, guns, hunting, video games. He will talk about that forever. And that's just something that I thought was really, really cool for people to get out and really see.
That's honestly, he and Kobe are two of the guys I wish I had gotten into this sports earlier to cover. Because, yeah, listen to that podcast. Timmy is a character. I only wish
he's
I could.
So funny.
Yeah.
He's so funny. Like, I want to get him on, but I just feel like I'm going to have to, like, go to San Antonio and knock on his door.
It might be worth it.
It will be worth it because he talked about his daughter and he talked about his daughter and he said that his daughter, he named her Quill. And what people don't know is that man is a huge like sci-fi, like comic book fan, huge. Mm-hmm. So like Channing being also a nerd, they're both nerds. And so Channing was like, did you name him Quill? And he named him Quill after from Guardians of the Galaxy. Right. So like, that's how he named his daughter Quill. So it's like, all of a sudden, again, you're shooting a shit with one of your boys and you get information. You're like, Tim Duncan's a huge fan. He named his daughter Quill after Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, what kind of those are the things that for me, those make me so happy when you can deliver that type of information to fans. And it just that's where I get excited about doing these type of things.
I wanted to pause real quick to tell you guys about BetOnline. Football, as you know, is back in full swing. And while you might not be at a game this year, you can still be in on all the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every single chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals, and even player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Just head over to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Oh, man. I want to jump back into the NBA for a bit because this is really fun, though. Actually, before we do with that, do you play video games?
Yeah, I'm a huge gamer growing up.
What do you play?
Huge gamer. So I used to play, I was a huge Halo guy. Like when Major League Gaming and all that stuff got going, I know the next one's coming out. They actually pushed it back because I don't think people were too happy with the graphics based off of, you know, the new Xbox. They tried to make it kind of so it was like could play on any, but they're like, no, just upgrade it, do whatever. But like I try to play Call of Duty, then all of a sudden you get kids and you just can't play as much, right? And it's different. It's different than like Madden and NBA 2K where you can get it, you play it for a couple months, you just kind of play the game. Where like first person shooters, you got to log hours every single day. If you don't use it, you lose it. So I played a little Call of Duty. It's a little too much, but I love first person shooters. Any first person shooter, I was big on which was third person, but like Gears of War, like those are the games that I will play all day.
Are you running like Warzone or Team Deathmatch? What are you playing on COD?
Team Deathmatch, I dig, but it's like one of those things where it's just like a competitiveness. It's like, I know that I'm going to have to put in like 5,000 hours.
Yeah.
And so it's all of a sudden you're just like,
lot.
You got a lot of hours. And it's like, you just play to kind of have fun and to kind of like have one or two good games, start to figure it out. And you're like, okay, I'm cool. It's like, there's a reason why the 16-year-old kids are so good at it. And there's a reason why guys that are in their mid-20s are so good at it. Because the older you get, your reflexes, all that stuff starts to slow down and life actually happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're a two-team Xbox. You're not team PlayStation.
No, fuck no. PlayStation's trash.
What?
PlayStation's trash.
You have so many PlayStation trash. Exclusives. All you have is Halo.
And what else do you have exclusive for PlayStation?
I mean, have you played God of War before?
Come on. Continue.
Continue.
Give me another exclusive. I wait because I hate play. No, look, I had a PlayStation, used to play PlayStation, and then like the PS2 was again, I'm old, but I'm just saying like PlayStation was big, and then Xbox came out. Xbox, like Halo was the last game. I did this thing there was like 10 video games and Halo was the last one and started playing it. And I was like, oh, this is fun. Then my friends were like, yo, this is like Bond. What is this? I was like, what are you talking about? So the next thing you know, we're playing first person. And then it was a wrap for me. I was playing 10 hours a day.
Aren't the Uncharted games PlayStation exclusives? Uncharted is PlayStation exclusive. Have you played that before?
But again, if you don't give me something that is as good or better, not even just from a purely like video game standpoint, but like from a, like a legacy standpoint, if you don't give me something as good as Halo,
have you played those though?
I'm asking you a question.
I've never played Halo, so I played it a couple times actually.
You've never played.
I'm Team PlayStation. I can't. You see, I'm just flabbergasted.
I'm telling you.
But Uncharted and God of War, those are two of the greatest.
I've heard of them. I've heard of them, but Halo is it's.
I really need to get you to try this game. To try those games.
First of all, my big meat claws, they don't fit well on the little PlayStation remotes. My thumbs used to hit each other, and that little like on the middle buttons. And
the center button.
Like, yeah. I can't do that. I need something with a little bit more girth.
They have bigger controllers. I don't know if you
now they do, but the original did. The little original dinky dinks were
tiny
like
ones. Yeah,
I was like playing on a Nintendo like NES. It's like this is trash.
Oh man! So then you don't play Switch at all. Switch is probably like just a tiny controller for you.
No. I do have a Switch. Cause you know, on the go, like I like the PSP. Like again, I don't even think they make that shit anymore.
But
I'm saying like I don't care. Whoever makes the best like handheld video game system, I'll play. I'm not like loyal to Xbox or anything. If you make a dope like handheld thing. So I had the Switch and I had the PSP, but they haven't really made anything that's like the Switch is dope, but they haven't really made too many great like small gaming systems.
That's true. But the controller wise, you're good with that? The little Joy-Con, what they call it?
Because I wouldn't use it that way. I would more use it from like a broad standpoint when you were holding it. Yeah, that's how I would use it. And I tried it with the little center remote and that was just okay. And they're like, oh, you can plug this into your TV. But it's like, no, if I want something in my TV, then I'm going to fucking.
Have you tried it though? Because it does look good.
No, I did it. Well, no, it is dope. It is dope. But my thing is more of like, if I'm going to put something on my TV, I'm going to turn on my Xbox, right?
Sure,
like there is no game that they're going to give me that, you know, now for kids and you can get them a gaming system to go and a gaming system to stay. Yeah. Yes. That makes sense.
I was going to say, mainly like, if you want to play Mario Party with friends or something or kids, if you're into that kind of stuff.
Yeah. During parties, we try and drink and talk to girls, but that's cool.
With the kids around, I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kids around. I don't know if they drink too.
But... Yeah, I don't care. I don't care about the kids.
What did you make of, I guess, which team in your eyes, going back to some of the NBA, which team do you think needs to make changes in order to move into the next tier of contention?
I would say
the Phillies.
In order. I don't lead me. I was going to get to them. Don't lead me. I was just trying to give you more than just. I would say the Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay.
Then I would say I don't think the Clippers need to make many changes. They need to make some tweaks. I think the Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets, those three teams. I think the Dallas Mavericks need some more toughness. They need some more grittiness because they have the talent, but in order you have to fill out the rest of the talent around. I think the Houston Rockets, they're just completely screwed with the way their team is made up. I'm not saying that they're going to suck. Not saying they're not going to be good, but it's going to be difficult for them to win a championship. And you combine the fact that now all of a sudden the Golden State Warriors are going to be back and they have a better, well-balanced team than they do. So immediately you can imagine a team that wasn't even in the postseason last year, now leapfrogging them in like the postseason rankings for this year. And I think the Dallas Mavericks need toughness. They can't have Porzingis trying to break up fights. And then I look at the Philadelphia 76ers and, you know, the way they are. So they overpaid for Tobias Harris twice. They got to figure out how they want to play and who they want to play with. So I don't know. I just think that those are the three teams that I kind of look at that need to actually make some tweaks and changes to get over that hump.
What did you think of the addition of Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers to that Sixers staff? Do you think they can maybe swing a deal for like Ben Simmons for Harden? Is that something they should look into? Is that where do they go from there?
Ben Simmons is not Harden yet. He's not. you would trade both those dudes for Harden, Ben Simmons and Embiid.
And Simmons for Harden?
I'm more saying you wouldn't do that from age and from legacy, but I'm more just talking about, like, James Harden is a top four player, right? You don't trade a top four player for picks and a top 15 player. That would be you don't do that. And so I think both teams need to try and, you know, liquidate one of those guys, whether it's Ben Simmons, Russell Westbrook, like one of those things. It's okay. It's okay to move on as long as you have an actual plan, right? Like, I think that's the big thing. So I think Russell Westbrook, I think even Chris Paul, there's a lot of guys out there that, you know, teams are probably going to try and move away from, or you're going to have to try and build a different way because they take up so much of your salary cap. How much you can do after that?
I feel like this era that we're in right now has a lot of teams, maybe I'm just stuck in the moment, but sort of stuck in mediocrity where there's not much room to grow in terms of, like, maybe the Rockets, where do they go? Sure. The Sixers, the Wizards, when they get John Wall, Beal, how good can they be really? Are they contenders?
No, they're not going to be there. They're not. No. Are they what?
But no, I'm saying there's a lot of teams stuck in mediocrity where how do they improve without trading one of their guys?
The worst thing that you can do is be right in the middle. It's a well said thing. It's like, if you're not in the top five and you're not competing and you're not in the bottom five and you're getting draft picks where you can potentially get a guy that can change everything, like in recent history, like a Blake Griffin or, you know, somebody along those lines, or a Luka Doncic. If you're not getting those type of guys, that's going to set you up for the next 15 years to restart the cycle of, like, okay, Luka Doncic is going to be great for the next 15 years. So now we know that we have 2 to 3 years. Let's add people around them. Let's make sure he's developing. Let's get the right pieces around them. Let's start to figure out this puzzle. The only way you get that is if you're at the bottom. You have to be at the bottom to get those players, or you have to have flexibility. And so these teams that are right in the middle with no flexibility, and James Harden has what, 4 more years, 5 more years as a top player?
Probably, yeah.
I'm not saying he won't still score 20 points a game.
But a top four player.
Yeah, top four, he probably has like 3 to 4 more years, right? Because then you would imagine, like, a guy like Luka could leapfrog him. Jason Tatum might leapfrog him if he continues to grow. And so that's the thing. It's like, you have to make a decision to kind of, you know, which direction are we going to go? And you have to liquidate. It's always the best to liquidate your talent high than it is to try and liquidate your talent low.
Yeah, I thought last off season was pretty crazy in terms of the movement. But I mean, with so many teams sort of stuck in the middle, like you said, which is the worst place to be, I could see a lot of them maybe just trying to make a move to see what they can do. Maybe it's get better, get worse, but do something, because you can't just stay in that middle on the path while your stars are, you know, aging and expiring.
Yeah,
and all that.
You gotta figure it out. You want to trade a guy when he's 32, not when he's 35. You know, because you'll get more value for him. I'm sorry, but, like, I'm not going to say that the Houston Rockets can't win a championship, that they won't win a championship. But if I had to bet for them making it to a finals or even winning a championship, I would give it a 10 to 15%, right? 10 to 15% chance of them actually winning a championship. That's fair. Now, James Harden, and I'm not saying trade James Harden, but if you were to hypothetically entertain the idea, you could get more for him now, right now, than you will next year, than you will next year, than you will the following year. So from that standpoint, it's like, yo, we have a 10% chance of actually getting it, but we can get the most value, whether it's multiple picks and a ton of young talent that can make us start over. Why not start this process over? And maybe you get one player that you can build around for the next 15 versus the next 3.
Right. Well, I guess that's sort of, I mean, Milwaukee obviously doesn't want to trade Giannis, but what do you think ends up happening there with Milwaukee and Giannis?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that one. I don't think they're going to trade him because it's just too much and they want to keep him there. I think he wants to stay there. We're going to win a championship. I'm sorry. Like, but people make it seem like, look, I went to Cleveland to go play with LeBron James. So I don't want to hear anybody like, they're not going to get free agents in Milwaukee. It's like, that's not true. They just have to make the right moves. They have to do the right things. Mm-hmm. They have a slim chance. But it's like they have all the talent there. You're not winning 60 games every single year with the MVP and you can't win a championship. You just got to bring in the right pieces that can help finish off some of these games. That's all it is. They were up 2-0 to go to the NBA Finals and smoke that series. So it's like, don't tell me that they're that far off. And it's like, I don't care if Giannis goes, you know, to a couple of places. Like, dude, he's got to start over. Giannis can go play in Dallas but he's going to be starting over, right? That process. Yeah. You can go play in Miami and it's, yeah, but you still have to go through certain monsters to get to where you got to get.
Maybe this angle of, as broadcasting has helped you, but similarities in playing with Jason Kidd and LeBron, similarities, differences. Can you go into those?
Well, it's, you know, this is what I try and tell people. I can speak the game at a very high basketball IQ level. Like when I watch the game, I see the game, I can communicate it on a very, it doesn't mean I'm always right or any shit like that, but I can communicate like thought process, you know, tradition, history, you know, I can communicate it at a very, very high level. Mm-hmm. These guys play at a very, very high IQ level that like even a guy like myself, like I have no clue what these guys are seeing, thinking about and talking. And I played for 17 years at a very high level. And it's like, these guys will start talking and they'll start saying stuff. And I'm just like, all right, just let me know what we're doing on defense. Let me know where you want me to go stand on offense. Like that you guys are on a whole nother like stratosphere. And the similarities is that they understand, like Jason Kidd, especially because LeBron could score at an extremely high level. So even if guys weren't hitting shots, Bron could just be like, screw you guys, I'm going to go do this. Where Jason Kidd, his whole success was typically predicated on making sure that other people were successful. If he led the league in assists, that means he's getting more people involved. So many players got paid playing with Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, guys like that. So Jason Kidd, the way he played was always about the team. He would dominate on the basket. He would dominate on the defensive end. And they both were similar in the sense that like they could never score and still dominate a game, whether it's through defense, passing, rebounding, they could do that. Jason Kidd was a triple-double machine and he's 6'5" and couldn't really jump, 6'4" and couldn't really jump. LeBron can do the exact same thing where he can get 15 rebounds, 14 assists and, you know, have 22 points. And we look at him like, oh, he had his off night. So it's like just their basketball IQ and the way they have their fingerprints on all aspects of the game is next level.
A couple more for you. I know you play with Kevin. You've talked about this before. Where do you think he gets traded, if he gets traded?
I don't know. You know, I don't know where Kevin gets traded. I'm glad he signed his extension. I'm glad he got his money. That's my boy, you know, so he can keep affording that chef that he feeds us so well. He's an amazing chef that Kevin has. But no, man, look, Kevin, he's won the championships. He's won a gold medal. This man's a 5-time All-Star, 6-time All-Star. He's won, he's literally won everything that he can win. So at this point in time, I just want him to be in a place where he can contribute to a team. He gets an opportunity to play. You know, you want to continue to compete at an older age. I don't think he's ready to just be a quote unquote mentor. He's got way too much talent left to just be a mentor. So hopefully he gets into a place where maybe he's not competing for a championship, but at least he's competing to be in the postseason every single year.
Tell us a bit about the Sports Gap and why you started it.
Well, you know, what's so funny is like, you know, doing media and starting, whether it's Snapchat or my podcast, doing all that stuff, I just started to see so many gaps in sports and what they can cover. ESPN is not going to cover DeAndre Hopkins flipping people off on his way to a game. Just doesn't cover that. Now, that's great. That's great because there's people, bloggers and people that talk on podcasts about it and people that do like their internet shows. There's people, but you don't talk about it on Fox. You don't talk about it on SportsCenter. You don't talk about those things. You don't talk about a lot of things. And so I felt like being an individual like myself to try and give you Last Week with John Oliver vibe, but covering sports and how they intersect with pop culture and media and, you know, just all of the different fun and politics, all the different fun things that everything is kind of intertwined right now. Mm-hmm. And that's really where we came up with the name, the Sports Gap, because literally we just try and fill in the gaps when there's athletes hanging out with pop culture figures and we want to talk about that. Or if there's, you know, politicians talking about athletes and how they are either contributing or messing up what they're trying to do, we talk about that. And we try and do deep dives into, you know, random topics. So the idea is just to have fun. Like I said, I love The Daily Show. I love The Colbert Report. Those are the shows that like I used to just love watching, their sarcasm and their fun and how they could tell you a serious topic and you can learn something while enjoying yourself. And I just want to do the exact same thing with sports because that's just kind of my thing. How can we learn something but have fun and talk shit and be sarcastic? That's where the Sports Gap came in.
If you guys
go subscribe,
found it.
go subscribe on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, all these things.
I was going to say it's at the Sports Gap, I think on most platforms, right?
Every platform. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all YouTube, there.
Yeah.
The videos are on YouTube, I believe, the full length videos. Yeah. What are they, about 10 to 12 minutes each?
10 to 12 minutes. We've been deciding, you know, do we want to keep it under 10 to help increase the views, or we have such good content, but you know, typically it's between 10 and 13 minutes. We try and keep each episode.
Go watch those. I think the latest one he had was about the fall of Houston sports. I think he closed out with a very savage line that I think everyone liked. You know, LA, you guys are in a great moment right now. You guys are in a great time. Enjoy and embrace sports, because it can disappear like this. And just ask any Houston fan. People ran with that. That was the funny. When I heard that, I was like, oh God. I was like, that was.
Yeah. But see, my goal is to keep giving guys like you content, man. I know how this works. I've learned. It's just that as long as I give you guys something to post, House of Highlights something to post. So if I talk shit about Giannis and I say that he's a Pippin, I'm not doing it intentionally, but it's like, I know when I say something and I see it on Clutch Points, I'm like, uh-oh, here it goes. This day, I mean, once I start to see like House of Highlights or Bleach Report, I'm just like, I'm not trying to start shit, people, but fuck it. Here you go.
I guess now you take control of it. Now you can take control of what you want to say. And at least you're self-aware, though. I like that you're self-aware and you know, as soon as you see something, you go, oh, maybe that'll go up on here or here, whatever.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Once I see my mentions blow up and it's like a quote on a Bleach Report or a quote on a Clutch Points, I'm just like, shit, I'm gonna have, well, I know what they're gonna be talking about on First Take tomorrow. Some silly shit I said. Yeah,
we'll try to take it easy on your mentions.
No. You guys mention the Sports Gap all you want. You guys, listen, man, we'll put Sports Gap under Clutch Points.
That's another conversation, actually.
Yeah, that's another conversation.
Richard, where can people find you?
Man, you can find me Richard A. Jefferson on Instagram, rjeff24 on Twitter. That's pretty much all I got. I'm more just, you know, you can find me typically saying something sarcastic underneath SportsCenter or ESPN's Instagram if you follow them. If I get there within the first like 45 minutes, then I'll try and post something smart ass.
Richard's always got a nice take for you guys on the jump whenever he's on.
Yeah, I try.
Richard, thank you very much for joining us. If you guys like the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you guys find your podcast, whether it's Apple, Google, iHeart, iTunes, all those. You can follow me at Tomer Azarly, that's TomerAzarly on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Clutch Points, follow Blue Wire. We got a lot of great content for you guys this offseason. Obviously, talking to Richard, we got Danny Green, we got Steph Curry's personal trainer, so we got a lot of good content for you guys. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Richard, again, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. Thank you, guys.
Enjoyed, guys.